I like the Harry Potter movies. Have you seen them? I mean, they've been out for a long time now. Well, in Harry Potter, The Order of the Phoenix, I think it's the fifth movie or fifth book. And I am a movie watcher, I'm not a book reader. Towards the end of the movie, there is this battle that is epic. It's between the headmaster of Hogwarts, that's Dumbledore, and the evil dark wizard Voldemort. And all the while, Dumbledore is trying to protect Harry Potter, the protagonist, from being killed by Voldemort. Voldemort wants to kill him. So, with wands in hand, Dumbledore and Voldemort, kind of symbolizing good and evil, light and darkness, they have this spectacular magical duel. There's lightning and fire and water and glass and all sorts of these elements being flung everywhere. And seemingly beat in this conventional duel, Voldemort shrinks away, he makes himself disappear, and he uses dark magic to invade Harry Potter's mind, possessing him. If Dumbledore is going to protect him, well, he's going to cheat, basically. So he possesses his mind, he manipulates him, he basically has control of Harry Potter's body, and he begins talking to Dumbledore, mocking him. All the while toying and ridiculing Harry. And Harry was defenseless to him. There's nothing Dumbledore could do to save Harry. There's nothing Harry could do to defend himself against this dark foe. All seemed to be lost. He was surrounded with darkness, deep, deep darkness. But then, Voldemort says something and it triggers Harry. He calls him weak. And with that, Harry's mind is flooded with all of these memories of how strong he really truly is. Images of his friends and his family and his loved ones, the embrace of his parents, the companionship that he has, the warmth from the people that he loves of life, all of this overwhelms him. And he works up the strength to tell Voldemort, "You are the weak one. You'll never know love or friendship, and I feel sorry for you." Out of the darkness, the light prevails, and with that, Harry expels Voldemort from his mind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness could not overcome it. Life and light and love overpower the darkness of death. You know, our gospel lesson today doesn't have to do with Harry Potter. But it does have to do with darkness being overcome with light, and the darkest darkness being overcome with the lightest light. Because in John's gospel lesson for us today, on this All Saints Sunday, Jesus is moved by emotion, moved by connection, moved to compassion to restore the life of Lazarus, his friend, to call him after he was dead, and not just dead, but stinking dead, back to life. And in doing so, Christ shows us that right here and right now, there is nothing so deep and dark that the voice of Christ can't reach into or call out and bring life. We all feel as if our lives have been consumed by darkness sometimes. And right now, as we face into a particularly dark time in our nation's history and of the world, I think that John's gospel promises something really strong and amazing for us about the light overcoming the darkness. And that is an important word for us to hear. So I want to talk a little bit about this scripture this morning and what it might mean for us today in the 21st century. So last week on Reformation Sunday, you might remember we talked about what happened when Jesus and the disciples passed through this town called Jericho. They entered the town with 12. And they left with 12 plus a crowd. And then this blind man named Bartimaeus worked up the audacity to call out to Jesus for help. The crowd told him to get bent, to shut his mouth. In a way, their true colors showed. They didn't care about Bartimaeus. They were not the colors of compassion. But Jesus listened to him. He called him forward. He restored his sight. He called out to him in that man's darkness and opened his eyes. The man followed on with Jesus, and we don't know what happened to the crowd. And then we talked a little bit last Sunday about how the church is going through something of a dying process. And when something is going through a dying process, its true colors, its human colors, show. And like that crowd, whose true colors, some American churches, they, in their desperation, in their dying process, are clinging to things in our greater culture that are not Christ-like. And therefore, they are showing the colors of a lack of compassion. I mentioned how the Reformation today may be one of death and resurrection in the church. This week, we find ourselves 11 chapters deep into John's Gospel, and we find ourselves again exploring a resurrection story, one that doesn't necessarily have to do with the church, but one that has to deal with listening to the voice of Jesus and being called out of the darkest darkness. So in our story, we hear about a funeral. That's the setting, really. The people at this funeral, they're divided about Jesus. Some of them, they affirm him. Some, they embrace him. Some criticize him for not doing more for this dead man named Lazarus. We hear that when Mary, the sister of Lazarus, who was Jesus' friend, found Jesus, she was distraught. She reacted the same way, the same sort of grief that we might if we've lost somebody that we really, really love. She plays the blame game. If you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died, she says, in a way. You know, I remember one time when I was working as a hospital chaplain. This man had come into the emergency department, the ER, and he had died. And it was at his bedside, at his body, that his adult children and his wife, they gathered, and they began to play the blame game. I remember his adult son was so pissed with the EMTs that brought him to the hospital. I remember him saying, if you would have taken this street instead of this other street, he would be alive. Expletive, expletive. I'm going to sue the expletive out of you. He was really upset. He thought that it was the problem of the EMTs taking some scenic route to the hospital. But the fact was, the man was dead. He wasn't coming back. There wasn't anything that could be done to bring him back. It was final. And I think this is what we hear in Mary's voice today. When Jesus saw Mary and heard her weeping, and the Jewish folks around, if we have to remind ourselves, Jesus was Jewish. His church family would have been Jewish. We hear those Jewish folks around, they were also weeping. Those were the synagogue goers. And when Jesus sees these Jewish folks, and when he sees Mary weeping, we hear he is greatly disturbed in his spirit. He's deeply moved. He is greatly disturbed. Now, this is a word in the New Testament that in other places signifies anger. You know, what is this about? What is going on here? Does this mean that Jesus is feeling grief? Is he upset because the crowd is hypocritical in their grief? Is he angry at the people's inability to believe maybe what he's about to do? We don't really know. Whatever the case, the verbiage here has to do with anger. And he was disturbed in his spirit. Now, what does that mean? Well, what that essentially boils down to is that something had disturbed his very being, his essence. Now, have you ever felt like something has bothered you so much that your spirit hurts? I don't mean like your soul throws up a little bit, but I mean something really hurts you. It disturbs you at your core. There was a picture that I remember from last year. It was circulating at the beginning of the year, and it was at the height of the Syrian refugee crisis, and it was so painful to look at, so disturbing to me, that it made me cry the first time I saw it. It was of this little boy who was probably around my daughter's age. He was face down. He had drowned. He was on a beach, his lifeless body right there on the sand. His family had attempted to flee the violence in Syria, and he died in the process of their exodus. I don't know what happened, if he fell out of the lifeboat, or he simply tried to swim with his family, or if their boat capsized or something. But as a parent, that image cut through me like a damn knife. And even though I wasn't going to go to Syria, even though I wasn't going to join the Peace Corps or something like that, I could tell in my spirit that I was disturbed by this. And I'm sure that there's something that has done this to you at some point in your life. The point is, we hear that Jesus is this way when he sees the people grieving and when he is approaching the tomb of his dead friend. Jesus is not like Spock, devoid of human emotion. He is deeply moved by what is happening around him and by the people that are hurt. So Jesus says, "Where have you laid him?" And when they tell him to follow along, that's when it really hits him and he weeps. The Jewish folks say, "Oh, you can tell how much he loved him." And you also hear that some of them are angry, they're upset. They say, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Again, the blame game. Haven't we reacted this way during times of deep loss in our life? We hear that Jesus is disturbed, but he makes it to the tomb. And when he approaches the tomb, Jesus says, "Take away the stone." Now Martha, another sister of Lazarus, probably already having processed some of the grief from him having died days ago, and not wanting to add insult to injury, says, "Jesus, teacher, with all due respect, he's been dead for 4 days. He stinks. He's dead. He's really dead. Please just let him lay." To which Jesus responds, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. Jesus sends up a prayer. And then he cries out with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" He came out of the tomb, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, his face wrapped in a cloth. And then Jesus says, "Unbind him and let him go." You know, surely it is in this raising of Lazarus that we hear about that glory of God, right? It's an amazing miracle story, an incredible story, an incredible reaction that people have to this as well. We hear that some people believed because of what they had saw. But we also hear that others begin to plan to kill Jesus and Lazarus, to stop this one that calls the dead back to life out of the darkest darkness. So what do we do with this story? And what is the hope in it for us on All Saints Sunday? The story of Jesus raising his dead friend Lazarus. Well, I want to tell you, I think first and foremost, this story doesn't in some way get rid of the promise of the day when all of those in the tombs are going to hear the voice of Jesus and come out. It doesn't erase the promise of resurrection because Jesus does it. This is not a resuscitation. This is a full-blown resurrection. The guy was dead for 4 days. And it also doesn't negate the grief that people have. When you've lost somebody that's loved, you don't need to hear that Jesus is powerful enough to raise the dead. You don't need to hear about some miracle in which God's glory comes blazing forth when you've lost somebody. I mean, I think that's important. I don't want to dismiss that, but it's also a cold comfort to someone that has just lost a loved one. "Oh, don't worry, you're going to see him again someday." That's hard to hear. I think for us today, sitting in these pews, remembering our lost loved ones, remembering the saints that have gone on before us, and also being situated where we are in this time and place in our country's history, the story might tell us that Jesus is the one in whom there is life, the one who even now calls us out of all the dark and binding places of death, and that out of the darkness, light prevails. Jesus is life. Jesus is light. He is the light which restores the sight to the blind, the light which restores life to the dead. He is resurrection itself, the place where death ends and everlasting life begins. Jesus breaks into our present and transforms it. I think a word of hope for us is that on both sides of the grave, Jesus has been sent to call our names. On both sides of the grave, Jesus is life for us. You know, not just when we're dead, but today, here and now. And this is what All Saints Day is for. It's not just to remember those that have passed on long ago, those whose deaths are near to our hearts today, not to point ahead to the ultimate promise of resurrection. But these things are certainly a part of this day. Brian Peterson, a professor of New Testament at Lutheran Theological Seminary in South Carolina, writes, "This day, All Saints Day, is about what all God's saints have known and experienced, that here and now there is no death or grief or fear so deep and dark that the voice of Jesus cannot reach into it and call us out and bring life." That in itself is a word of hope, my friends, for each of us, as death is a reality and not a single one of us hasn't been touched by it, but also a word of hope as our country and our world aches, as the days get shorter and colder and darker and the climate of our nation seems to be rapidly deteriorating into this downward spiral where families have been torn asunder, where cultures have been blotted out, where ties and relationships with our allies have been repealed, where we seem to lack more and more compassion for the other every day, the immigrant, the alien, the different, the woman, the child. And as our leaders refuse to lead, and American mythology is turned upon its head. I think today reminds us, as the saints fill our pews in spirit and in our hearts, that here, there is nothing, nothing so deep and dark that the voice of Jesus cannot reach into it and pull out life. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness could not overcome it.